Welcome to the seventh episode of our UCM in Conversation with podcast, where I am joined by Roy Albert. Hi, Roy.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. You?
Yes, not too bad, thank you. Nice sunny weather, even if it's a little bit chilly outside, but it's good always to see the sun.
Absolutely.
So Roy, you're a lead surveyor at the Valuation Office Agency, and you studied on our UCEM's Chartered Surveyor Apprenticeship on our real estate management pathway. So really great opportunity to speak to you as someone who's been through that apprenticeship pathway, and as we're recording at the tail end of National Apprenticeship Week, your apprenticeship seems a suitable place to start. So how did you come across our apprenticeship?
So I work for the Valuation Office Agency, and I'm based in Bristol. Prior to taking up the apprenticeship program, I was part of the valuation pathway, doing the valuation for NVQ. So I was always looking out for an opportunity to get me to that level of valuation. It was an expression of interest on the Valuation Office Agency's intranet that brought me to partaking into the apprenticeship program. So basically, the Valuation Office advertised for interest in taking the apprenticeship program, and I immediately take up that interest.
Great stuff. And then, so obviously, you became an apprentice. Why did you decide to study with us? I mean, I know apprenticeships, it's not really a case of choosing your education provider. But why did you go for the apprenticeship, which you did?
Well, I needed the accredited degree, which I didn't have. And for me, it was waiting for the opportunity to get some sort of pathway to becoming a chartered surveyor. In respect of studying at the UCM, I had feedback from others who studied with yourselves, who said how flexible it could be in terms of an apprenticeship program whereby you work and study at the same time whilst having family life. So the feedback was great in respect of what is on offer, how you get looked after by the tutors, the webinars that we can have at UCM, and all that kind of brought it to a conclusion that, you know, this is the way forward. Apart from that, it was also, the UCM was sort of attached to the Valuation Office, so that made the transition even easier.
Good stuff. So glad that there was positive reviews before you began studying with us. And, you know, now that you've been through that process, how did you find the apprenticeship?
I would say it was very difficult. For me personally, it's about doing your degree, then 2 years into your degree, you start your APC to become a chartered surveyor. You've got family life, you've got your work, you've got targets to meet at work, and trying to juggle everything at the same time, I always say it's about self-motivation. You need to be self-driven. It makes it easier because it's a difficult pathway to start with in terms of doing apprenticeship APC. And to get to any positive outcome, you need to have that self-drivenness about you. Procrastination will kind of, you know, settle in. You end up watching YouTube videos of stuff that's totally irrelevant to your studies. And what gets you through is that commitment. You need that to be there. And throughout the apprenticeship, possibly, I would say, not at the start, you're kind of growing into it. But as soon as you get into the big part of it, you need to be committed and you need to be self-driven to get you to the end line.
Okay, and obviously, it's 4 days of kind of practical work with your employer. So that's with the Valuation Office Agency, and then 1 day studies. That tends to be the routine of our apprenticeships. And obviously we do our learning online. So had you ever studied online before?
I just slightly. I did a computing online distant learning a few years ago, but it wasn't as committed as this one, the apprenticeship program.
Okay. And how did you find our online learning?
It improved with time. I think the feedback was we had a lot of learning materials, and a lot of feedback at the end of the semester was, can we introduce another platform, i.e. videos or podcasts, And that came into effect. And this was, I found this very useful, because instead of being in front of a screen and reading, you can actually be laid down, sat down in your car, listening to a podcast, get home, listen to a video. So having a combination of different platforms was a very effective method that was introduced by the UCM, which worked great for myself.
Oh, glad to hear that. I mean, we have quite a large online education department, and that is one of the focuses, that the learning is varied. There's no getting away from the reading. That's always
absolutely.
It's always there. It's a fundamental when studying anything. But where possible and where appropriate, yeah, bringing in other sort of media sources to pass on the learning just breaks up the monotony. Okay, and you felt that as you progressed, you sort of became more comfortable with it.
Yes, I did.
Okay, and you know, having been through it, would you recommend the apprenticeship route to others?
100%. On completion of my apprenticeship program, I have used various social media platforms to speak of my journey, my experience. I've also, advised people the apprenticeship route. It's not an easy one for everybody. However, with the support, with the commitment, with your self-driven attitude, it is something that's very possible. And if I can do it, I've always said to everybody else that anybody else can. So I would 100% recommend that route.
Great stuff. And you know, congratulations as well. You know, you've been through that process. So, you know, it's you mentioned it earlier. It's there's a lot of self-motivation involved to complete it. And that is the case for any of our students, you know, with online learning. But, you know, the support we offer, and obviously the support from your employer, that's, you know, very key. I mean, just quickly on that, I mean, how did you find the support both from the BOA and UCEM?
I must say I had a personal, so I started my degree in 2015. In November 2016, whilst playing football, I felt a bit ill. And it transpired that I was near getting a cardiac arrest, which for me, I've been playing sport for a very long time and I had no issues whatsoever. So that was a shock to the system. I was hospitalized for a few weeks. And the support I got from not just the valuation office, but from the UCM was absolutely fantastic. The options were given to me, and not once did I feel that it was a pressured option. I felt that whatever support I needed at that particular time would have been given to me, irrespective of what stage of my studies I was at. And what I mean by that is I did have a pending assignment due whilst in hospital, and I was told, categorically that this would not affect my assignment whatsoever if I decided to defer. So in terms of trying to decide what was best for me at that time, whatever decision I made wasn't based on any pressured option that was given to me, either by the valuation office or by the UCM. The support for me was what made me decide that I needed to carry on instead of deferring, and that decision was based on, if anything happened whilst I took the decision to carry on, I felt that I would have the support of both the valuation office and of UCM.
And yeah, I mean, I did not know about that. And how long were you in hospital for then?
I was in hospital for about 2-3 weeks because what transpired, what I thought would be, you know, get in, get looked at, send home, didn't really work out that way. I had to have an operation. And I did do my assignment from the hospital bed. Didn't do very well, but well enough to pass. Mm. But I was told by the UCM, you know, you don't have to do this. So it was my decision to do so. One of my feedback on my assignment was, you know, they did realize the situation. However, they did think I did well considering. So I think, looking back at this, I think the support that was given to me was very instrumental in respect of the result that I got in the end.
And are you back to full sort of fitness again? Have you been able to play football since?
Yes. I hope the doctor's not listening. But I did went back to football, not immediately after, but I still had my plasters on and I went back because it's something I love doing. But I did pretty much went back to it as soon as I felt I could walk, basically. Mm. Okay. Carefully so.
Well, I'm glad you're back to sort of full fitness and feeling healthy again and stuff.
Thank you.
Must have been quite a shock to the system and obviously glad to hear that experience that no added pressure was given either by UCM or the BOA during that time, which health is completely number one.
That's right.
So, going further back, what made you want to work within real estate?
Well, going back, really, I'm from a small Caribbean island called Dominica, and we don't have as much, building regulations because it's a very small island, like the UK, for example. But my interest really came from, I like the British architecture, particularly the Queen's Palace. I just love buildings like that, always had an interest in it. So I would see that on the television before moving to England. When I moved there, I kind of, accidentally fell into the real estate. I was an administrative officer working for the rent service. And a position came up to become a rent officer, whereby we calculate rental values for tenants who are in receipt of housing benefit. And, I'm thinking back now as to how important my role was in determining what sort of level of payments would be made to tenants based on the rental values. And looking from where I came from to where I was at that time, it kind of made me realize how big my role is. So, for example, I'm coming from a small island, and here I am setting rental values for a locality like Bristol or Gloucester or Swindon. And then it kind of, I got a more keen interest in being involved in the real estate itself. So all this put together, I just felt like I could make a difference. I enjoyed what I was doing. And I knew whatever I did would have an impact either which way. So I just wanted to enhance that sort of knowledge and understanding further.
So you mentioned that there's sort of more opportunities within sort of real estate over here in the UK. Is that why you've decided to settle over here, or were you intending to move back at some point?
Well, I did in my early years, people have that saying in terms of, I leave where you want to holiday or where you want to have a vacation. The Caribbean islands, it's always warm, always tropical. It's great. But living in England and doing real estate and being involved in it and looking at how, because the built environment itself, it's not just about, your residential property or commercial property. We're talking everything in the built environment, your infrastructure, for example. And looking at it in a wider picture of the kind of impact someone like myself can have in terms of my job role, I felt that, being in the UK, this is the best place to kind of explore as much as possible within the built environment. So that kind of impacted on me in terms of stay here and make a difference.
And clearly it's a place you're happy to be. I mean, because I see that you've worked for the VOA for 16 years, according to your LinkedIn profile.
Yes.
So, which is really great, really great organisation. So how would you look back in your career with the VOA?
The VOA, in terms, as I said, I moved from the rent service to the VOA. It's all government agency. And a decision was taken that, we're both kind of in the same sort of real estate, so we became one agency. When I look back, a lot of what I've achieved now was based on encouragement from my line management. It was based on a lot of learning opportunities that I always took up on. As soon as something was advertised, if it was relevant to what I wanted to achieve, I would take that up. The organization itself, as the VOA, we have what we call people survey in terms of what's going well, what could be done better. And it came to a point where on that survey, I would say probably more learning, to the point where it got to, thanks for the learning, it's been great. So there have been a very good structure in terms of what we said in the survey and what the result was in terms of the action taken. So the organization does try to help individual enhance their knowledge and understanding, learning opportunities. So I look back and I thought to myself, apart from the encouragement from my line managers and the agency, we all know the opportunities might be there. It's all about taking the opportunities. I think it's always been there for me personally, and I think that's been a positive part in my career.
And, you know, sounds like you've really been given the opportunity to progress and do what you want to do there, you know, sort of. I think is it three or four different roles you've held with the VOA?
So when we moved across, I was a rent officer, basically dealing with fair rent determinations and housing benefit. Then I went to non-domestic ratings, so looking at business rates. Then I was part of the DV services, which is split into two groups. You do statutory valuations and you do property services. So I've had a good rounded knowledge, probably might not say an expert knowledge, because some of it was part of my rotation to becoming chartered. But I've been through it with the valuation office. And again, it's another opportunity afforded to ourselves to be able to be more competent before going towards our APC value interviews.
And now you're working as a lead surveyor. So
yes.
What do you enjoy about working as a surveyor?
So at the moment, I'm part of the Check Challenge Appeal, which is the new way of doing appeals on non-domestic rating. And I think what I enjoy about it the most is each case becomes different, whereby you have a challenge based on the rate per square meter. It might be in the same location. I'm doing various areas. So you get a good knowledge and understanding of the market and how it works in that particular area. And it takes you around the country. It takes you doing different types of properties, offices, industrials, you know, different things and different aspects that will add to my experience and competency. Apart from that, the valuation office is very much about team working, whereby you get the support that you require. If, for example, you're struggling on one aspect of your work, there's always somebody with a better expertise in what you're doing you can call upon. And even working from home, there's always somebody on the other side of the line to get me through that. So enjoying what I'm doing now, it's about the team working and enjoying the Check Challenge Appeal. It's still pretty new, so we are still learning. So being part of that really kind of engaged me on a day-to-day basis.
Great stuff. So that's what you enjoy. But what would you say, I mean, you say there that it's only recent that you've had this role. When was it that you were appointed as a lead surveyor?
From the 1st of July 2020, I became a lead surveyor.
Great. So it's, let's see if my maths is good, that's about eight months now. So you've talked about the things you enjoy there, the variety of the role and the teamwork as well. But what would you say are the main challenges?
I think the main challenges here is, because the Check Challenge is a new process, is trying to get to grips with that process. And what I mean by that is, apart from kind of the valuations itself, which is what I do, there are processes in terms of, you know, you got from that stage, i.e. check stage, you've got a certain amount of period of time to get to the challenge stage. And then once we're dealing with that, we need to do different remarks on your valuation. Get all that in there, sometimes you tend to forget one part of it. And for me, the biggest challenge for me there is trying to get to grips with the whole process itself. And because we have an avalanche of challenges coming our way, it's trying to determine, right, which one do I deal with first? Do I attack the more complex cases, the more easier cases, which means you could clear it even quicker? So that, I think, will come with experience and being longer in the role. And for me, that is the biggest challenge, i.e. a new role in the Check Challenge Appeal and trying to determine the quickest way to get through my casework.
Great. So it's kind of managing your tasks and the order you go in. That sort
Absolutely.
Of thing. Yeah. Okay. But ultimately, a positive experience and something you're really looking forward to.
Getting
stuck into and hopefully, I mean, is this something you wish to continue in for many years?
Yes, I mean, for me, I always wanted to have a really good rounded knowledge of the valuation aspect of everything, without being, you know, too overpopulating in my mind. But going forward, I like the challenge appeal process. I like being able to negotiate agreements with agents and taxpayers. I like investigating things. How did we come to that valuation? What did we take into account? And just trying to look at things, because every challenge that comes my way, I have an open canvas. It's like, right, what do we have here? You know, is there an agreement to be had? And our role is maintaining a fair and accurate rating list. And for me, that's important. And to maintain a fair and accurate rating list, it's about getting the information from the rating agent or from the taxpayer, going through this and determining whether or not the rateable value or the tax that this ratepayer is paying is fair and is it accurate. And I find that part of the work really, really interesting.
Mm. So that's kind of a bit of a problem solving aspect of your work.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Great stuff. Well, yeah. So we've run through your studying with us with the apprenticeship and then you work with the VOA. But you're also well involved with the RICS. So, you know, for anyone listening who doesn't know, that's the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors, who you refer to as RICS. And our courses at UCEM are accredited by the RICS, which is the foremost professional body promoting international standards in surveying. And, you know, their accreditation is essential for us in ensuring our courses sync with the realities of the built environment professions we equip our students to succeed in. So, you know, our successful students like yourself will then move on to take, it's either whilst you're studying with us or afterwards, the assessment of professional competence or APC, which then leads to chartered status. So, for anyone listening who is interested in a career in surveying but doesn't know much about the APC, what is it?
So the APC is the Assessment of Professional Assessment of Professional Competency. So basically what it is, being a surveyor, be it a building surveyor, a quantity surveyor, evaluation surveyor, it's not about just the theoretical part of it, not just about the books. It's about your experience. So we have various competency at level 1, level 2, level 3. And what that means, level 1 is just having knowledge of what you do. So, for example, for competency for valuation, is a knowledge of what are the 5 methods of valuation. Can you define this? And level 2 is how do you apply these levels of valuation? And applying that would be on your day-to-day role, for example, valuing a property. In your competency, you're saying to somebody, right, I value this property by looking at comparable information. Based on the comparable information, I came to the conclusion that this property is worth X amount. This is a level 2. It's about doing. Whilst level 3 is about advising or recommendation. So you could say from that same valuation, I got all the comparable information together. I concluded that it should be that. Based on that, I advised my line manager, I advised a senior colleague, I advised the client that this is the valuation that this property should result in. So it's about your competency over 3 different levels, particularly level 3 where you're advising. And most times as a graduate or an apprentice, you will get peer review in terms of doing the valuation. You would have to call in a more senior colleague to more or less to say, are you happy with that? And you would get feedback as to whether or not you could probably enhance your report or add something else. So getting to that point where you're doing your APC, I think the most important part of this is all about due diligence. And we've always been told that the end result is about whether or not, as a surveyor, you're a safe pair of hands. Will you be able to walk into a surveying and job role and be able to deliver something with due diligence, taking into account all aspects of competency? And so that's what the APC is in fact. It's about getting you to that point where you not just know about it, but you do it and you can advise others on what you did.
And in terms of the practicalities of that, there's an interview element, I believe. So you know, how did you find the experience of gaining your APC?
I was part of the first cohort to sit my APC online. So normally the APC would be where the panel, you're invited to an interview after completing 2 years of experience in your job role. You'd be invited to an interview where you'd go to a function hall or a hotel or any venue where it's set up for you. And you have an hour to have an answer question method. So in the first part of it, you would have a presentation of any case study that you have been involved with in the last 2 years. And that presentation would be something that they would ask you questions on. So the panel got 10 minutes to ask you a question on your presentation, which is also 10 minutes. And then from that, you have 25 minutes where the panel asks you a question on all aspects of your submission work. So your submission work would be, apart from your presentation, anything you've done in that 2 years in terms of mandatory or anything that you've done that's technical competency. So this kind of allows you to have some sort of background in your surveying work or the practice that you undertake. And then you have the ethical part, which is asked by the chairman. So that's how ethical you can be in your job role, which would be acting with integrity, for example. And that is your full hour of interviews. And then once that interview is over, obviously, if you have any questions, you get to ask that questions as well. And then you get a result as to whether or not you were successful, which is a pass, or if you didn't get through, it would be a deferral. And a deferral is simply saying that, right, we think you're almost there, or that's where you are. You just need to work on this to get you to the next step, whereby you'd have another interview.
So how did you find it when you were going through that? I presume you must have been maybe nervous before you went into the interview, which is a fairly natural thing to feel before, you know, any of us do exams or anything like that. But how did you find it?
It's very nerve-wracking. It's one of the hardest, they say it's one of the hardest pathway or route that you take on the APC. And I believe what made me even more nervous is you don't know the questions you're going to get asked. Even if you have a submission and they only ask you questions about your submission, there are leading questions from there. And you cannot know everything. It's impossible. And knowing that you've done 4 years of studies and 2 years of practical work, but it only comes down to 1 hour to determine whether or not you're a successful a member of the RICS. It is very nerve-wracking. And carried this out online, I wasn't too sure at the time whether or not it would be a bit more nerve-wracking doing it that way or actually going to do it in person. But obviously, because of the pandemic, we had to do it online. And in your mind, you think, you know, I hope there is no, you know, IT failure or anything that might delay that even further. And for me, I believe what got me through it really is I had a good networking technique in terms of part of WhatsApp group, the RIC Matrix, LinkedIn groups, Property Elite. So it kind of got me thinking with other people at different stages of the career as well, be it going to sit their APC, have already sat their APC. So I kind of got some knowledge and understanding from them, both on a technical basis and just an experience as to how do they find it when they did it in person. So to go through all of that, I think it's very important you're part of a network, networking groups, because then you get that kind of feedback from other people as to how things should be going.
And at the end of your hour, I mean, did you feel confident that you had passed?
Not at all. it's one of them where, you know, they say on an average you get between 70, what, just over 70 questions in an hour.
Mm.
That's quite a lot. Because sometimes one question leads to another. And for me, once my hour was over and everyone said goodbye, trying to go back and think of the question that you asked, it becomes a blur. And then as soon as you pick up a question, you start thinking, oh, I think I gave the wrong answer there, or I could have given more. But I've always been told it's not a quiz. It's about a safe pair of hands at the end of the interview, whether or not that person gave us enough to think that he's a safe pair of hands. I was probably convinced that I got referred on the basis that I think I answered all the questions. Really? Why? How did that happen? There must be some wrong answers in there. So, you know, for me at that point of time, immediately after the interview, I think I rang about 5-10 people trying to determine, you know, how should this work? So I wasn't really expecting good news. And I think it's almost normal to feel that way.
Yeah.
After every interview, you almost convince yourself that you got referred.
Yeah, it's that thing of, you know, expecting the worst but hoping for the best in a sense.
So, absolutely, yes.
Yes.
With an expectation.
And how long was the wait then to find out whether you had...
It's exactly a week, which is great.
Yeah, it's very quick.
Yeah, it's good.
So that week, how was that week? Did you were you able to take your mind off it? Or
it's almost impossible to do so. Everyone kind of, you know, said to you, go for a walk, do this. You spend 4 years focusing on one thing to the next. So at university, you're focusing on your assignment and your exams. And then you come to your APCC, where you need to focus on trying to get your diary done. And then you come to the last road to prepare for your APCC, you need to do a revision. After all this is done on an interview, the natural thing to do is like, oh, it's all gone. But you really can't relax. You can try, you know. I mean, probably if it wasn't a lockdown, it would be probably taking part in sports to take your mind off it. We didn't really have that to do. Probably, you know, go out with friends. Again, we didn't have that part of it. Mm. And I think really just saying to yourself, you know what, did you do the best you can? And if the answer is yes, then the rest of it is down to that week as to what you're going to find out. So it's a matter of accepting that you've done the best you can. Here we are now, it's just a wait.
And so what month was it? Because you refer to having done it during the, you know, since the pandemic, basically. So, when exactly was it that you undertook the APC?
It was in May. I did it in May.
In May. Okay. So at that point, we were still in that first sort of severe lockdown, I think.
Absolutely.
At
yes.
that time. Wow. Yes. So, I suppose, I mean, at that time, yeah, if I remember correctly, it was just the once you were allowed out each day.
Yes, we will exercise.
I suppose that would have been a nice thing to take your mind off it, the best you could.
Right, yes, that's correct.
Rather than pacing around the your home and just dwelling on it. Great. And but then obviously you got the good news, which is great. I mean, presume it was celebration time at that point.
Oh, yes. I mean, strangely enough, I kept refreshing my computer the morning, making sure I don't miss that news either which way. And then I got a phone call from another candidate who was preparing for his APC. And he said, well, did you get the news? I said, oh, no, not yet. I'm still waiting. Oh, and the only reason I searched that early is because people who went before me at the evaluation office, they got the results really early. So I thought, oh, it's going to be the same for me. So they made me wait a bit longer. And whilst on the phone to that other candidate, I kind of refreshed my phone, and kind of the first word I saw was congratulations. And the feeling is something I will never forget, because I think the biggest part of this is, as I said, is you spend and dedicate a lot of time to this, from the university part of it to the APC preparation. And everything else is almost in the background, you know, the social life, your family life, to a certain extent, your working life. Because whilst you work 4 days a week and one day for study leave, during that 4 days, you still spend some time focusing on assignments and revision. So it's a lot of commitment for yourself and kind of forgetting everything else. So to kind of take that heavy load of 4 years in one go, It's fantastic, and almost to a point where, I'll be honest, I kind of missed the kind of you know, nervousness sometimes, or waiting on an assignment, or preparing for my revision. I missed it to start with, because I'm thinking, that can't be right. I've got nothing to do. Like, you know, I'm not revising. I'm not doing an assignment. I'm not preparing for an exam. Your 4 years becomes almost a norm.
Yeah. No, I think that again is something I've heard other students of ours who, when they've completed their studies, they've said a similar thing, that they kind of, in a way, they miss it. And then it's, you know, working out, well, you suddenly gain that free time back and kind of orienteering yourself again. So, so yeah, but a great feeling, which is, you know, and you know, as you say, something you'll never forget. How did you celebrate then?
Well, it was hard because I couldn't even go out. Normally the RICS would invite you to this kind of event, which we couldn't have. So I just brought myself a bottle of Captain Morgan's. And I had a good Saturday of it, which is the best I could have done under the circumstances. And hopefully once all this is over, I can celebrate with friends who some of them undertook the same as well, APC, so we can do it properly.
100%. I think for all of us who've missed out on celebration opportunities during this time, that when things do return, and we hope that that's as soon as possible, that we mark them and don't just forget about them.
A lot of making up to do.
Exactly. So, and then sort of full circle, you're now an RICS APC assessor. So how did this opportunity come about?
So this was part of what I mentioned earlier, networking. The evening before your APC interview, so your 1 hour interview, you're contacted by the RICS to have a run through. So it's like a webinar, make sure your equipment's working correct, your camera is working, you know, everything is ready for the next day. And I had a few issues with mine. My camera wasn't working properly. My microphone was a bit blurry. And the two people was helping me along from the RICS, they stayed online with me to make sure it was working. So they said they won't be leaving until everything works. Following that, I gave feedback after my interview to say how good it was that everyone make sure that everything was working properly. And based on that, you know, I got more networking at the RICS. And it was Jill Quinn who contacted me, to say, you know, how does it feel to be part of the first cohort to complete online? So I had to give feedback on that. And again, it was mentioned to me about being part of a charity and how do I feel about that. So part of my networking, particularly LinkedIn, kind of got me involved with certain members of the RICS. And I always try to help people as much as I can or to my best ability. And after passing my APC interview, I had a lot of emails from different people asking me, how did it go? What was the experience like? So it wasn't all technical questions. And based on that, I kind of found out that, you know, it was nice to impart what I've learned onto others. And it kind of gave me that drive to go even further. And when I was asked whether or not I would, you know, be interested in becoming an assessor, I said, well, yeah, that would be a great opportunity to give back to the RICS in some way or another. So it was an easy decision for me because I do like helping people the best way I can, be it from the valuation office or external private companies. If everyone asks, I try my best to help them out.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, yeah, and hopefully, you know, you can help with you can see yourself in others basically going through what you've been through and yeah,
absolutely.
Take them through that process. I mean, you mentioned there about Lionheart, which is the charity for RICS professionals, and you're an ambassador for them. So what does this role entail?
First of all, Lionheart is the only charity specifically for RICS professionals and their families as well. They've been in existence for over 120 years now. They offer personal, flexible support for the RICS professionals and their families to overcome unexpected challenges in your life. For me, my role is particularly trying to encourage people with the APC, whether or not you were referred or you're preparing to sit your interview, is trying to help people along. Because as I said, sometimes it's not just the technical part of it. You know, it's not just about knowing the questions. It's about the feeling, the emotional feeling you go through revising or sitting through the interview. How do you prepare yourself? And my role, particularly apart from the APC, encouraging APC students or candidates, it's about trying to gain more awareness of Lionheart and what they do. The services include work related support, so mental health at work, unemployment or redundancy, health and well-being, be it physical health or mental health, financial help, grants, debt advice and benefit advice, and also legal help. And a lot of professionals, RICS professionals, are not aware of Lionheart. And part of my role is trying to gain awareness and how they can help professionals as well as their families.
So great. If you're listening and you're an RICS professional, then do check it out. And hopefully, yeah, if someone who is an RICS professional is listening and they haven't heard of it before, then you're doing your job in that respect. Really great. And you know, good that you're continuing with lots of sort of, you know, extra curricular activities away from your work, you know, since you finished your studies. Thanks for your time today. I mean, just before you go, we like to end with a couple of quick fire questions. So I'll just run through them. So, I mean, you know, judging by your work, you're mentioning your networking. There's Property Elite as well, I believe, is another networking community you're part of. So you're a very busy person. But when you have downtime, what do you like doing?
You know, normally I'd be playing football or basketball, but now I more or less go to the basketball court with my little free time as my exercise to shoot some hoops, spend some time with my kids, and I'm a bit of a Netflix kind of a person now. I like looking at period films, so that's kind of my in thing now in my downtime.
I mean, you mentioned basketball, you mentioned Netflix, so I presume you've seen The Last Dance?
Oh yes, yes, you've got to watch that.
it was good timing, I think, that came along during the lockdown, and very motivational. So again,
yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Anyone listening who's not seen that and wants some motivation, then give that a go and find out.
The Last Dance.
Yes, it's I absolutely loved that, and
yes.
Yeah, makes you want to put on your trainers and find your local court, basically.
And get to the court. Very motivational.
Yeah, definitely. And sort of, again, with all the things you're doing, what's your best piece of advice for managing your time?
It's about, for me, I used to be a bit hopeless with doing that. But now I think I'm in a part of my life where I'm very committed to different aspects of the profession, and managing my time is very important now, because for me, being part of Lionheart, being an assessor now, I need to stay up to date with the RICS and the news and whatever is affecting the sector. My best advice really is you need to plan. I was terrible at planning. So from my day to day, I would have a to-do list. Apart from that, I get quite a lot of emails, people asking, you know, can you help me with this, help me with that? And it's about saying, you know, once you want to help everyone the best way you can, it's about thinking, right, I don't have enough time in there. Instead of promising somebody I can, and then you end up, you know, not being able to do that. I think the best way to do it, for me, I put everything on paper. I know I have this big, you know, whiteboard in my office / bedroom / you know, spare room, where I put everything on there, and managing my time is more important now than it's ever been. And I like it. I enjoy that.
Planning is very important. And you know, that's a really good piece of advice also about not over promising and then under delivering. Yes. So definitely some good bits of advice there. We talked about lockdown. So we're in our third lockdown here in the UK. What has got you through the various lockdowns since March?
You know, as sad as this sounds, my revision has. because I started really revising, you know, pushing myself towards the end of 2019. Lockdown was in March, so it kind of helped me as well, because not commuting to work meant that, you know, I could finish work earlier and then get down to revision. So that kind of got me through, because I was working towards something. So that got me to, you know, May, when I sat my APC. Leading from that, obviously, there wasn't much else you can do being locked up. But, you know, I went running on a weekly basis with some colleagues from, well, a colleague from work, social distancing, and, you know, doing your daily exercise. But apart from everything else, I think it gave you a time to actually be home and spend time with the family. Because whilst I was carrying out my UCM degree, I spent a lot of time going to workshop in London, Birmingham, Exeter. I had to work from different offices to gain the experience. So I spent less time at home, more time on the road and in the offices. So it's almost like a silver lining, more or less, whereby lockdown kind of gave me an opportunity to actually spend time at home and rest, catch up on sleep, because I'll tell you now, in that 4 years, I had very little sleep, because you're always thinking of something that you should have done, could have done, or should be doing. So yeah, spending that time during that third lockdown, I think it's all important as well to try to catch up on things that you couldn't do before. Reading, for example, was something I've never been interested in, but now I bought myself a lovely book, and The Ideal You, and I'm going to read through that and see how that kind of make me a more ideal person, per se.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of plans at the beginning that everyone would achieve this, that, and the other. But yeah, it hasn't worked out as simply as that. But then, and anything which you can do, and like you say, a good time for reflection as well. That, you know, there have been positives, and you mentioned your family as well. So,
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that must have been another thing to consider. You know, with your, is it one kid do you have, or do you have a few?
I've got
three kids. Yes. Yeah. So yeah. I suppose managing your time whilst also homeschooling or looking after them must have...
It does take a toll.
So a different challenge to the travelling around, but yeah.
A challenge, yeah.
And you're based in Bristol, which is a great city in the west of the country. So what do you enjoy most about living there?
I love Bristol. Where I live, luckily, I live close to my football club, close to work. I think the best part of Bristol is, whilst you might live in probably the city part, it takes you such a short time to have a country drive. There's a lot to do in and around Bristol. Because being from the Caribbean, I'm pretty much used to being part of, you know, the greenery. It's not far for me to drive to go to the lakes, for example. Could go for a nice little walk. Not far from I'm Wales, where, you know, you get the good views. Unfortunately, we can do less. We can't do a lot now. But generally speaking, living in Bristol, it's a great city, very diverse, and a lot of activities to attend to. And I think that's what makes it great.
Yeah, that's great. And as you mentioned there, you know, you're from the Caribbean. So have you travelled around, you know, most of the islands around the Caribbean? And if so, I mean, is... When we can all actually travel abroad, is there a particular island you would recommend?
Well, I would always recommend the Commonwealth of Dominica, where I was born and raised. But I played international cricket for Dominica, and that gave me the opportunity to travel to other islands. The first island I went to was Barbados, which is absolutely fantastic. And been to Antigua. Montserrat. So all these islands, you know, it's not far from each other. They all have something different. Dominica, for example, if you're a keen hiker or a diver or just want to relax, you know, I would 100% recommend going to Dominica on your holidays. It's where I grew up. It's great. It's relaxed. A low crime rate. Anyone who's a bit concerned. And a lot of nature to take part in, waterfalls, pools, everything. I can't sell it enough. If you just look it up, you will see exactly what I'm talking about. And as soon as we can travel, I'll be going back home. That's for sure.
It sounds ideal. I'm sure anyone listening would want to be heading over to the Caribbean once it's possible. And you mentioned the relaxation. I think that in particular would be
that's what we need.
Yes, all of us wherever it is would be great after all of this. And as you heard there, all you have to do is just play cricket internationally. It's as simple as that. So
yeah.
Wow. So yeah, that's quite a claim to fame, and sort of really shows your interest in sports and also your skill as well to be playing for a national country. Not many of us can say that.
No.
and just finally, just want to ask, you know, what inspires you? So whether it's a book, a person, a quote.
It's a good question. I think my inspiration comes just from my upbringing. I would say my mom really does. I looked at her struggles growing up, and it was a matter of, you know, for me personally, I wanted to get myself in a position where I wasn't just helping myself, but being able to help family. And the inspiration is looking at how hard they worked just to get me an education, basically. And sometimes we look further afield for an inspiration. But for me, mine was closer home, and I'm looking now at my career. I never imagined in a million years that, you know, I'll be a chartered surveyor. I didn't even know why it was. In England, as I said, I raised up in a small island, even a smaller village. And as I always say, the population of my country could probably fit at Old Trafford Stadium. So to transpose myself from there to now, you know, being recognized as a chartered surveyor and being part of such a major role, I always look back and think my inspiration came from my upbringing and the struggles I saw my parents went through just to get me into education, and that will always be my inspiration.
That's great. And yeah, very inspiring. And I think, you know, It's always a good thing that when you ask this question that someone says it's the family who've inspired them, and that tells you that, you know, you come from a good home, which is great, and what, you know, you want all children to do, basically grow up in a good home where you feel inspired and then can go on and achieve all the things you can in your life. So
yes,
that's brilliant. So yeah, hope you pass this on to your family to listen to.
Thank you.
So yeah, absolutely brilliant. You know, really, really great to chat to you. You know, like I say, we discussed many things there with your apprenticeship, your work with the VOA, your work with the RICS, and your, you know, networking activities, but also, you know, a few unexpected things which have come in, you know, and great that, you know, you've bounced back from your illness. Really glad to hear that. And also even find out a little bit about Dominica, which yeah, never heard too much about before. So that was, you know, again, this is something we can send to the tourist board in Dominica, and maybe they could use one of the quotes there. But it's been really enjoyable speaking to you, and yeah, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Andrew. It's been really good speaking to you as well.
Thanks. So if you would like to follow in Roy's footsteps and find out more about our apprenticeships, head to ucem.ac.uk/apprenticeships. Thanks for listening.